there's a reason why the day after Bitcoin was introduced, all the banks didn't embrace it and be like, here we go. That's a new way of doing things. And all these people who are screaming from the top of their lungs, like, you know, decentralized currencies and move to this, move to that and whatnot. I'm not saying there's not a place in the world for these, but like these types of attacks and whatnot are the types of reasons why it's going to continue to remain a wild, wild west category as opposed to a major movement in global monetary funds.
Welcome to the Cybersecurity Defenders Podcast, weekly Intel chat. My name is Christopher Luft. I'm one of the co-founders of Lima Charlie, and I will be your host. Joining me today to break down the cybersecurity news being shared by the awesome InfoSec community is the one and only Matt Bromley. And don't forget, this podcast is brought to you by Lima Charlie, maker of the SecOps Cloud Platform, infrastructure for security operations. Think of it as a backend for your MSSP, where everything is built API first. Scale with ease and confidence as your business grows. You can start today for free at limacharlie.io. Now let's get into it.
Ba, 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 ba. Ba, ba, ba.
How you doing, Mr. Bromley?
I'm doing well. How are you doing today, sir?
Oh, the morning was rough. I had to go pick up my van. We started to have a little bit of rumbling when the automatic gears were changing, and I thought maybe something wrong with the transmission. Yeah, totally new transmission. So I got to pay that bill this morning, which was a little bit north of $8,000 Canadian, and that's like a kick in the teeth on a Wednesday morning.
Yikes. Plus, yeah. Gas prices are through the roof too.
Yeah, it's a lot.
That's a little bit more on my side than your side, maybe, but you know, it's a thing. So vicarious apologies, not sure, but sorry to hear that. Well, in that case, then let's have a gear shift problemless episode today.
Yeah, and you'll notice I put a couple Schadenfreude episodes near the end to make myself feel better.
You needed some of that, huh?
That's right.
Let's go for it.
All right. So North Korean-linked hackers are believed to be responsible for a 290 million cryptocurrency theft targeting the KELP DAO, Decentralized Finance Protocol. The attackers drained approximately 11,500 RSETH. I'm not sure. Restaked Ether worth about 292 million by sending a malicious instruction that exploited weaknesses in the protocol's verification process. Ouch. After detecting the breach, KELP DAO paused affected contracts and blacklisted the attacker's wallet, preventing an additional attempt to steal roughly 40,000 RS ETH valued at about 95 million. KELP DAO operates as a liquid restaking protocol that routes deposited ETH through EigenLayer to generate additional rewards and issues RS ETH tokens in return. I knew that because I studied eigenvectors in university.
Nice.
Yeah. The attack exploited the protocol's reliance on a one-of-one verifier configuration, meaning a single verification path was used to validate instructions. This setup allowed attackers to manipulate the validation process and execute the unauthorized transfer. To carry out the attack, the hackers targeted Layer 0, a cross-chain messaging infrastructure used by KELP DAO. Layer 0's decentralized verifier network, or DVN, relies on multiple remote procedure calls, nodes to verify cross-chain instructions. According to Layer 0, the attackers compromised two RPC nodes and used them to conduct an RPC spoofing attack, sending forged verification messages designed to appear legitimate. The attackers then launched a DDoS attack against the remaining RPC nodes. This forced the network to fail over to the compromised infrastructure, allowing the malicious instructions to pass validation and drain the funds. Wow. Security researchers attribute the operation to Trader, a subgroup of the North Korean Lazarus Group, known for large-scale cryptocurrency thefts. The incident triggered broader impacts across the DeFi ecosystem. Some of the stolen funds were deposited into the AFV3 lending platform as collateral, allowing attackers to borrow wrapped Ether and create roughly $195 million in debt. The resulting activity caused liquidity stress in AV, leading to an $8 billion drop in total value and temporarily blocking withdrawals of more than $5.1 billion in stablecoins as lending pools reach full utilization. Like, wow, you know, a pretty complicated theft, and then seeing the knock-on effects this has in the market, you know, it's almost like unregulated, untraceable financial markets might not be the best idea.
Imagine that. Who saw that coming? Look, there's two things, Chris, that came to mind when I talk about this from a defense mechanism. Number one, we've said it before, on this podcast. I know I've said it before. I'm going to encourage other folks to go find that episode where I've said it before. Like, do not doubt the level of research that DPRK will put into understanding cryptocurrencies and contracts and all that types of stuff. Like, they are, without a doubt, I think, maybe publicly, leading the front right now on these types of threats. So if you're anyone who's actively working in and trading in these spaces and whatnot, and you know, you've got different platforms, you write smart contracts, you deal with cryptocurrencies and things like that, just please understand that you have a threat group who has basically two primary modes of foci and operations. The first one is posing to be IT tech workers. The second operation is understand the world of crypto and use it to steal money. And like, you know, this has been around for quite a long time. We've seen North Korea engaged in multiple different types of financially related or financially motivated attacks before. They aren't launching your typical ransomware style stuff, Chris. They spend time studying, you know, smart contract flows, how money moves around these particular ecosystems, and then inserting themselves right into, like, I mean, come on, like a single, this is a single point of failure attack, right? This is a single point of failure. Only one person was needed to sign off on a particular transfer. They figured out how to get into that process. And we don't give threat actors compliments on this side here, but this single DVN configuration, this single, you know, step of like a decentralized verifier network, as opposed to a multi DVN, which is maybe more of the kind of response that folks would usually either do or things they should have had in place. It's an architectural flaw. Without being too blunt about it, it's an architectural flaw that unfortunately the adversary was able to figure out, take advantage of, and folks, like, this is where we've got to be better. Like, some of our parts, we've got to be better, and we've got to think about security ahead of time. And we've got to look at, okay, I'm transacting millions or billions of dollars across this thing. Security needs to be a mandatory step. And to your point, kind of to kick this off of like, maybe these decentralized networks aren't the best thing. There's a reason why legacy banking operates the way that it does.
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason why the day after Bitcoin was introduced, all the banks didn't embrace it and be like, here we go, that's a new way of doing things. And all these people who are screaming from the top of their lungs, like, you know, decentralized currencies and move to this, move to that and whatnot. I'm not saying there's not a place in the world for these, but like, these types of attacks and whatnot are the types of reasons why it's going to continue to remain a wild, wild west category as opposed to a major movement in global monetary funds. Yes, there are multi-billion dollar market caps inside of some of these. It does. I'm not calling them useless, but adversaries are figuring out it's way too easy to rob these than it is to go after like legitimate, long-standing brick and mortar sources of funds and whatnot. And don't get me wrong, North Korea's tried the BEC attacks. They've tried the ACH frauds. You know, go and take a look at Bank of Bangladesh from years ago. Like, they tried, didn't work out well for them, but this is a quick hit and it worked.
And to add some context, so if we go back to 2022, they've stolen almost $7 billion with 2.2 of that in 2025 alone, with one single heist, which I think we talked about on the show, 1.5 billion. Like, you couldn't even physically steal that money because it would be too much.
Yeah,
but
you shouldn't be able to.
Yeah, like, you would need like a lineup of trucks down the street and like a forklift. But here you can do it with the stroke of a key. So
done.
Go buy some gold.
That's right. Yeah, go lock into those precious metals, folks. Yeah. They're harder to move around.
Yeah. This one had me rotating keys the other morning. Our website is on Vercel. So Vercel, the company behind the popular Next.js web framework and front-end cloud platform for deploying and hosting web applications, has confirmed that it suffered a security breach involving unauthorized access to its internal systems. The incident came to light after a hacker using the name Shiny Hunters claimed on breach forums that they were selling stolen Vercel data, including databases, access keys, employee accounts, and source code for $2 million. In a security notice, Vercel acknowledged that an attacker gained access to some internal environments. The company stated that the compromise affected the credentials of a limited subset of customers. Impacted users have been notified and instructed to reset their credentials while the company continues its investigation into the scope of the breach. According to Vercel, the incident originated from the compromise of context.ai, a third-party AI tool used by one of its employees. After gaining access to the tool, the attacker was able to take control of the employee's Google Workspace account, which then provided access to parts of Vercel's internal environment. This access included environment variables that had not been classified as sensitive. Vercel CEO Guillermo Roche noted that customer environment variables are encrypted at rest and that the company uses multiple defense in-depth security mechanisms to protect core systems. However, the attacker was able to expand access by enumerating variables labeled as non-sensitive. The company has indicated that additional details will be shared as the investigation progresses. Threat intelligence firm Hudson Rock reported that credentials associated with a context.ai employee were previously stolen by the Luma InfoStealer malware in February of 2026, which may have played a role in enabling the attack. The original breach forums post advertising the stolen data has since been removed, and Shiny Hunters Group has reportedly denied involvement in the breach. So, this stuff happens. Unauthorized third-party tool, that's a thing that we see sometimes. So I just want to give some credit to Vercel, being on the other end of this. We were notified fast. All the things that needed to be rotated were flagged, and they just seemed to be right on top of it. The way for resetting the connection with GitHub was fairly automated, and everything was pretty smooth. So it only took me a couple hours to make sure I had done everything and had my T's crossed and my I's dotted.
Yeah, but that's a couple of hours, Chris. You shouldn't have had to spend doing this. I don't mean to be, overly blunt in this particular situation. I know you were not the only person on Earth who had to deal with this. I think many, 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 many people had to deal with this as well. Look, this is one of those situations, folks, where we've now reached, not now, but we have reached, like OpenClaw was another example. I'm going to be very straightforward in this, Chris, because I just got off of a webcast where I was talking to people about and stuff like that. We've reached a breaking point where people have extreme permissions and they don't necessarily understand how things chain together.
Right.
And stuff. And I'm just being kind of blunt here. Like, there is so much happening in the world of AI development, third-party tools, and everything like that. Folks are just clicking yes on everything. And I'm giving some advice to defenders here. Like, I think as a security community, like, we have reached another pinnacle moment where user education is going to become incredibly critical to making things successful here. Maybe the last one was either like, and it depends on your organization, not you, Chris, but to our listeners here, it depends on whether it was a cloud hybrid adoption or like multi-factor authentication, right? But there is a seismic shift happening right now where we need to be re-educating users. You've got people who are developers with extremely privileged accounts who are linking all sorts of tools together, giving access and permissions to all these things across the board. One of the soapbox moments that I got from a lot of the industry was like, why are these things connected and allowed to talk to each other this way?
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's one of those situations where it's like a third party AI tool being used by a Vercel employee. Look, Chris, there's a whole world out there of being like, well, what was the third party AI tool doing? Number one, like, is that, you know, part of the acceptable AI usage inside of the organization? But then number two, it's like, why were all of these things connected and this level of access was allowed to happen that allowed this compromise to get to this perspective? Right. There's a larger discussion here. And I think there's a lot of education we in security need to do because folks don't understand the permissions that they're granting. This is so much more. Chris and I have talked about this for weeks and months now. This is so much more than just over-permissioned MCPs.
Yeah,
and so much more than just using a model for everything without knowing what the model can do. This is, I'm going to link a bunch of components together and like, I don't know what the impact is. And there's an adversary who's like, well, I do. And
yeah,
enough, here we go.
That's why I have two desktops at home and two laptops I travel with. One's the stunt computer and one's the computer that touches customer data. And those things do very different things for me and throughout my day.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. I never want to be the guy that sunk the ship, you know?
Yeah.
When it was early in my career, I used to get offended when I didn't have admin access on something. And now I want admin access on the least amount of things possible.
Oh my gosh. I'm in the same boat now where it's kind of like, you know, hey, Matt, we gave you access to a thing. And I'm like, not going to log in.
Yeah. I don't need
it. Don't worry. You won't see me there. Yeah. Matt, we noticed you haven't logged in the past few months. That's by design.
Yeah. Yeah, don't want to be that guy. All right. Next up, the decentralized social media platform Mastodon experienced a major distributed denial of service or DDoS attack that caused a significant outage on its flagship server, Mastodon.social. According to the platform status updates, the attack began on April 20th at approximately 1 p.m. and disrupted service for several hours before mitigation measures were implemented around 4 p.m., restoring accessibility to users. A follow-up update posted on April 21st indicated that the attack had stopped and normal operations had resumed. The disruption follows a similar incident that targeted Blue Sky only days earlier, suggesting a possible trend of attacks against decentralized social media platforms. Blue Sky had previously reported being hit by what it described as a sophisticated DDoS attack. A threat actor known as 313 Team, which claims to be a pro-Iranian hacktivist group, publicly took responsibility for the Blue Sky attack. However, these claims have not been independently verified. In contrast, no individual or group has publicly claimed responsibility for the DDoS attacks targeting Mastodon. Both Mastodon and Blue Sky have experienced rapid growth in popularity following Elon Musk's acquisition of X, formerly known as Twitter. These platforms promote decentralized infrastructure and alternatives to centralized moderation and algorithmic content controls, which has attracted users seeking different social networking models. The incident highlights the susceptibility of large social platforms to DDoS attacks, capable of temporarily disrupting availability. Although the outage lasted only a few hours before mitigations were deployed, it demonstrates how infrastructure supporting decentralized networks can still be impacted by coordinated traffic-based attacks. So yeah, interesting to see there's a pattern between the two, kind of gets your tinfoil hat on, like what malicious forces are behind this. The Iranian claim, 50-50.
Yeah.
I
think this is exactly what we think it is. I think every social media / communication platform right now is going to fall under these types of attacks because there's people who are on those networks who are associated affiliated with certain countries, companies, political associations, and things like that. And I think it's par for the course, Chris. Maybe what's different now is the critical mass on each of these, or let me rephrase that. Critical mass is no longer on one platform. It's now on multiple platforms.
Right.
So you see different DDoSes coming through. And I just want to highlight really quick for people here, like a DDoS attack is literally a denial of service attack. It is meant to overflow or flood externally facing systems with so much traffic that it brings the service down. Chris and I are not talking about DDoS's use as red herrings and stuff like that. I honestly think based on initial cursory analysis, this just looks like, you're a platform that has people saying things that we don't like. Mm-hmm. So you're in the target list now. And sometimes it's as simple as that. And, Mastodon was attacked here. Blue Sky was hit a little bit earlier. It's not out of the realm of possible that people are just like, I don't want this platform to be successful. And I'm not successful, like it's getting started, but like, I don't want people to communicate here.
Yeah.
Therefore I'm going to bring it down. I don't like the posts. I don't like the tweets. I'm still going to call them tweets. I don't like the tweets. I don't like the posts. I don't like the things that are being said here. Chris, what I don't know, and I say this somewhat jokingly, but I honestly don't know the answer to this question is like, I don't know if Truth Social is also getting hit with this, like if it's just kind of a round robin style of attacks or kind of like what's going on there and whatnot. But it's interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, none of you are safe. So I just had to look it up. On Mastodon, a post is called a toot. On Blue Sky, it's a post.
Okay.
So I like toot. We can go from tweet to toot, but let's not get to post. That just feels a little,
What are you talking about? I'm going to be honest with you, sir. I'm not sure about Canada, but here in the U.S., if you toot, that is not a Mastodon post. That is something that you do to cover up an act of flatulence.
All right. I don't want to have to get HR in here. On to the Schadenfreude articles. So these ones gave me a little bit of a reprieve from my sad feelings about paying for my van. Two U.S. nationals have been sentenced for helping North Korean remote IT workers fraudulently obtain jobs at more than 100 U.S. companies using stolen American identities. This scheme generated over $5 million in revenue for the North Korean government. The defendants, not going to try those names, helped facilitate the operation by running infrastructure in the United States that allowed overseas workers to appear as if they were based domestically. One of the people was sentenced to 108 months in prison after pleading guilty in September of 2025 to conspiracy to commit wire fraud, money laundering, and identity theft. The other received a 92-month sentence after pleading guilty in January 2026 to conspiracy to commit wire fraud and money laundering. Both defendants will also serve 3 years of supervised release and were ordered to forfeit $600,000 obtained through the scheme. According to court documents, the operation ran from approximately 2021 through October 2024 and relied on stolen identities from at least 80 U.S. individuals. These identities were used to secure remote IT jobs at major U.S. companies, including Fortune 500 organizations. The defendants also operated so-called laptop farms, hosting company-issued computers at U.S. residences so overseas workers could remotely access them using keyboard, video, mouse devices, making it appear that the work was being performed from inside the United States. To further disguise the activity, the defendants created shell companies such as Hopana Tech LLC, Tony WKG LLC, and Independent Lab LLC. These companies had no real employees or business operations, but were used to receive payments from victim companies and distribute funds to overseas collaborators. The scheme generated millions of dollars, with the defendants and several other facilitators receiving nearly $700,000 collectively for their participation. Investigators also determined that workers involved in the scheme accessed sensitive corporate information, including source code and export-controlled technical data from a U.S. defense contractor developing AI-powered technology. Authorities have seized web domains and financial accounts connected to the operation and recovered dozens of laptops and remote access devices. Several additional suspects connected to the scheme remain at large, and the U.S. government has announced rewards of up to $5 million for information that disrupts financial networks supporting North Korea's cyber operations. So yeah, I mean, the outcome for these guys doesn't seem that bad given what they were doing, but like Fortune 500 companies, you know, IP from defense contractors, like you think about the potential for catastrophic data access and in the kind of stuff that can happen from this, it does make you a little bit shivery.
I mean, I don't disagree with you, and I don't have a point of contention, but to me, this is like, we've talked about this particular threat. I mean, this is all from 2024, right? Some of these things. But first off, folks, for those of you listening, you may not be aware, like this is how long it takes to build these cases, right? This isn't like this happened 3 weeks ago and Chris and I are like, hey, they kicked in the door, you know?
Yeah.
This is like episode one for us.
Gears of the court system moving,
Absolutely, but look, the only thing I have to say is there is an entire apparatus built around fraudulent employment scams, IT scams. We've talked multiple times about DPRK getting into this and whatnot. Like, it's no surprise that this is there. I'm glad to see the arrests happen. And actually, this is a good article, right? It's folks getting arrested and being shut down. It's financial damages. It also has eight other defendants who are still at large and would love to arrest them and that kind of stuff if possible. So there is a lot of, you know, really interesting kind of takeaways from this, which is like two people get arrested, eight people are still at large, $600,000 return, $700,000 return and stuff like that. It's like they're taking millions. The fine is a lot less than that. It's easy to get kind of very upset at these types of things because it feels like a ton of fraud and worker abuse. But what Chris, what you said and what you led with kind of before I started going down this road was, what did they access during the time? And this is what I feel the big bad takeaway from a case like this is. What did they access? What did they have access to? Mm-hmm. What did they do with that information? And what type of damage is going to be seen as a result of that? The $3 million in payments and all that kind of stuff is one thing. But I look at it in a deeper sense of like, what did the employees do? And that's kind of like the larger threat of this entire kind of fake IT worker campaign and whatnot is, what are these people getting access to? And what are they subsequently doing with that information as well?
Yeah. And it's kind of shocking, but not surprising. You know, Fortune 500 companies, I guess maybe this was early because it was 2024, but not having better detection capabilities and screening capabilities for bringing people in, knowing that this is a threat, right? Especially a defense contractor, like it's terrifying.
Yeah, very much so.
All right. So best for last. This person gets what's coming to them, and it's a betrayal of trust thing. So yeah, this one's got like a little bit of sugar on top for me today.
Nice.
A former ransomware negotiator has pleaded guilty to conspiring with the Black Cat Alpha V ransomware group to conduct attacks against U.S. organizations in 2023. The individual, Angelo Martino, age 41, from Lando Lakes, Florida, admitted to collaborating with the cyber criminal group while working at a U.S.-based cyber incident response firm. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, Martino abused his position by secretly sharing confidential information about victims with the attackers during active ransomware negotiations. This information included internal negotiation strategies and insurance policy limits, which allowed the ransomware operators to optimize the size of their extortion demands. Martino's cooperation with Black Hat began in April 2023 while representing at least five victim organizations through his employer. He provided the attackers with details about how much the victims might be willing or able to pay. These disclosures were made without the knowledge or permission of either of the clients or his employer. Black Hat compensated Martino for providing this information, effectively turning a defender in the incident response process into an insider that assisted the ransomware group. The case also involves two other cybersecurity professionals, Ryan Goldberg of Georgia and Kevin Martin of Texas. Martino admitted that he worked with them to deploy Black Hat ransomware against multiple U.S. victims between April and November 2023. In one successful extortion case, a group obtained approximately $1.2 million in Bitcoin from a victim organization. The three men divided their share of the ransom payments and used multiple methods to launder the funds. Law enforcement has seized roughly $10 million in assets from Martino, including vehicles, a food truck, a luxury boat, and cryptocurrency linked to the crimes. Martino pleaded guilty to one count of extortion and is scheduled to be sentenced on July 9th. Goldberg and Martin had previously pleaded guilty to the same charge in December and will be sentenced on April 30th. All three individuals face a potential maximum sentence of 20 years in prison. At the time of the incidents, Martino and Martin were employed by Digital Mint, while Goldberg worked for Signia. Both companies stated they cooperated fully with investigators and emphasized that the employees' actions violated company policies. Security experts say the incident highlights structural risks in ransomware negotiation processes. Daniel Tobok, CEO of incident response firm Cypher, argued that negotiations and ransom payment process should be handled by separate parties to prevent conflicts of interest. If the negotiator does not have access to payment mechanisms or financial details, there's less opportunity for personal gain. Maury Haber of Beyond Trust added that organizations should avoid assuming trust simply because a company advertises ransomware negotiation services. Instead, victims should separate negotiation, response, and forensic roles and enforce least privilege access for any third party handling sensitive incident data. Yeah, this one, it missed me. You know, betrayal of trust stuff really, really bugs me. So hopefully these guys get the higher end of the sentence there and make some big life changes.
Chris, I've been in cybersecurity for a long time now. It's taken me around the world. I've met people of all sorts, shapes, sizes, races, creeds, beliefs, you name it. I've met a wide variety of people inside of cybersecurity. And let me speak on behalf of every single person I've met. I've never been happier to see three pieces of garbage being taken out like this article is. To the three of you, I hope you hear this episode and you understand that you never deserved to work next to, let alone share the oxygen with, some of the incredible defenders I've met in my time. And the fact that you were able to get into a trusted position in incident response is a shame. I hope that the sentences are high. I hope jail is extremely uncomfortable. I hope it's expensive. I hope the limit of every single inconvenience in life comes to you and that you you experience it in the worst possible way. I won't call for post-mortem style discussions and that kind of stuff. But Chris, this one hits extremely home. I don't think I've met these individuals before. If any of our listeners ever have, I'm sorry you had to interact with and share talking space with these people. I'm sure at some point in time they were great guys or something like that. But I have absolutely no room for this, Chris. This is 100% abuse of trust. It is utilizing insider knowledge and a very privileged position inside of an industry I hold near and dear and true to my heart to extract millions of dollars from organizations. And then not just that, but it's like, you know, I mean, going out and buying like luxury fishing boats, food truck vehicles, all this kind of stuff. To me, it's just like icing on the cake of how much of a piece of trash are you that not only do you steal money from your customers and your clients by coordinating with other people, but then you use it to just buy superficial crap on top of that. I'm on my soapbox, as you can tell.
I was going to say, it sounds like you picked your car up from the mechanic this morning too.
Chris, I've been that consultant who has sat in those boardrooms at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. I've been in the room when a newspaper calls a CEO and says, I'm about to publish a story on your cyber attack. Do you have any comment? I've slept in the cafeterias of data centers before. I'm not boasting or bragging. I'm trying to tell you that there are people who go through very varying levels of stress when it comes to these types of attacks. And the fact that these three pieces of trash looked at this situation and said to themselves, there's an opportunity for us to make a little bit of money here and abuse the trust, not just as negotiators, but also, like, Chris, ransomware incidents are not one or two people. There are multiple teams of incident responders and lawyers and internal security folks and whatnot who are involved here. And to take that entire process and just defecate all over it, because I'm trying to be careful with my words here, is just such, like, it's a very, very personal thing. So I'm super glad you included this article in here, number one. Two, I'm glad we get to finish on this. Three, listeners, if you've made it this far, you know Chris and I only go on rants in certain situations, and this is
awesome. Matt more so than me.
If a final little thing here, not only am I upset about Chris's transmission replacement this morning, for any of our listeners, if you ever had to operate in the space with any of these three people, Ryan Goldberg, Kevin Martin, or Angelo Martino, I feel sorry for you, and I hope that your career has not suffered as a result of it. But other than that, Chris, I'm glad the FBI is doing its thing. And like I said, I hope the three of you deal with the most extreme inconveniences for the rest of your life.
All right. Well, on that on that note, I must say I feel better about my van. Thanks for cheering me up, Matt Bromley.
There we go.
All right. We'll talk to you next week.
Awesome, Chris. Take care.
Take care. Bye. And that brings us to the end of another Intel Chat. You can support this show by sharing your favorite episodes with a friend or subscribing and giving us a rating or leaving a comment on your chosen podcast platform. If you want to be part of the conversation and access the intel we talk about in real time, you can join our community forum at community.limacharlie.io. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you on the next one. The Cybersecurity Defenders podcast is hosted and produced by Christopher Luft. The show is co-produced and edited by Sam Blake, with graphics by Amr Al-Khatib. Sponsored by Lima Charlie, scalable infrastructure for your security services. Visit limacharlie.io to get started for free.